This is a Sound Rebel podcast.
To work with us on your podcast, go to soundrebel.co.uk. Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you.
Hi, my name's Helen, and I stopped drinking alcohol almost exactly 7 years ago. When I stopped drinking, I really felt a lot of benefits. My health was better, my finances were better, my attention was better, and I really felt like I started to kind of grow up as a person. At times, it was still difficult. At times, even now, I feel like sometimes it's hard to explain to people why I don't drink. And sometimes still, I feel like I'm a bit alone on this journey. But a couple of years ago, I found Over the Influence, and that really changed things a lot for me. And I just felt like I wasn't alone in this journey anymore. It's just so nice to have this massive connection with all these like-minded people. Come along to Over the Influence and be part of an amazing community.
You've heard the podcast. Now join the conversation. Go to overtheinfluence.co.uk.
Welcome to Over the Influence. If you are just tuning in for the very first time, welcome. It is wonderful to have you listening. If you're thinking, what is all this about? Well, basically, we sing from the rooftops about sobriety. None of us were meant to be here, to be honest. We all started out taking a break from alcohol. Over the Influence was born, our online community was born, and here we are. And between us, I can't even work it out, about 6 years sobriety, something like that. It is quite ridiculous. My name is Sharon Hartley. Please do call me Shaz. Call me Shazza. I'm based in Lancashire in the northwest of England. I took a break from alcohol for 90 days in September 2018, having been drinking since my late teens. Enjoyed it-ish through my 20s, ramped it up through my 30s, became quite miserable with booze in my 40s. So I thought, let's make a change. Went for a 90-day break, changed everything, and I am still completely booze-free. 3 years and 3 months, something like that now. And it is just, it's brilliant. It gets better and better and better, and I thoroughly recommend it. I could wang on. I shan't. I shall stop. And do not do this on my own. In the future, we've got the very, very tanned co-host, Freddie Bennett. Hang on, I said that wrong. In the future, who has just hit an incredible milestone in New Zealand.
I am in the future. It is Tuesday morning for me, and my name, as always, is Freddie. Almost 3 years ago now, I was a heavy drinking party boy, very stressed, very depressed, trying to paint a happy face to the outside world. But inside, I was pretty miserable. So I thought, why not take a break from alcohol, just like Shazza? I gave it 30. I gave it 180. I gave it 365. I went around the sun one more time to make it 2 years. And last week, I celebrated 1,000 days alcohol-free. It is amazing to be in the One Comma Club, and I would not be here if it was not for Shazza, Ben, our amazing guests like we've got today, and all our tens of thousands of wonderful listeners. So I'm here, I'm happy, I'm excited. Let's do this.
Freddie, we're very, very proud of you. 1,000 days is absolutely amazing. Allow me, please, to introduce our podcast producer, Mr. Ben. He used to be in the background. I love the fact that the name Mr. Ben has stuck. It is glorious. And before we speak to Mr. Ben, somebody posted on Instagram, Karen Davis Coaching mentioned us in a post. She's hit 100 days booze free, and it's fantastic. It's a lovely, lovely post. And then at the end of it, she says this: if anyone is interested in finding out more about being alcohol free or sober curious, then I recommend the fastest growing alcohol-free podcast on the planet. That would be us, guys, Over the Influence. I recommend you listen from the start. Of particular interest to me was producer Ben's journey as he continued to drink and then moderate and then become booze-free. A story that is both fascinating and inspiring. And here he is, that fascinating man, that inspirational man, Mr. Ben.
How very kind. Yes, hello, I'm Ben. And I was a drinker when I started producing this podcast. Shaz and Freddie didn't care. They just wanted a decent podcast producer. But I knew that my relationship with alcohol wasn't very good. In my 20s, I drank because I enjoyed it. In my 30s, I drank because I was stressed. Long story short, I had a wonderful life and career in Birmingham. Got offered a big promotion, moved up to Liverpool, but with the promotion came lots of extra stress that I wasn't expecting, and I went to the pub to try and relieve that. I thought, right, I'm going to give 3 months a go. I'm going to see how I feel after 3 months. I'm going to readjust my whole relationship with alcohol within 90 to 100 days. I got to 3 months and thought, this feels really good. Things are better. Relationships are better. Work is better. I'm going to do 6 months. Got to six, thought, right, got a power three to 12. Got to 12, and now I feel confident to say that my life is so much better without alcohol being in it, and I'm never going to drink again because I never want another bloody hangover. Delighted, by the way. Speaking, the reason I said I'm originally from Birmingham is because our guest is just from down the road, and it's lovely. I think it's the first person from the Black Country we've had on this podcast. Shaz, I know you got a big introduction ready.
Well, it's a big intro, but I'm going to keep it simple because I want our guest to take over because we do a lot of banging on, don't we? I mean, that introduction in itself just took about 15 bloody minutes. So enough about us. every week. I just can't help it. This podcast is about the guests and it is about the stories that you share. And it gives me great pleasure today to introduce our guest. She is called Shayna Jasmat. She's from Dudley. Now, you've told me that you're 41 years old. I would say you look about 25. That the sober glow is working for you. And before we get chatting, I just want to use a line that you used in an email to us, if you don't mind. No, don't cringe. Please don't cringe. I think this is brilliant. And this is why we were desperate to talk to you. You signed it off, Shayna, the only Indian female I've come across in the UK openly shouting loud about alcohol addiction and mental health. Let's start with that, because I think that is a huge statement and it's brilliant. And welcome to the podcast.
Hello, thank you for having me. I'm a bit scared because I don't know how to follow all of that. That line, I don't remember writing that, but it's true. I think it's true, as in that's how I feel. And yeah, that's what I'm doing. I'm shouting as loud as I can because I just don't think, especially when it comes to alcohol addiction, I just don't see anybody else talking about it. Not just female, Indian females, but even males. There aren't that many. Now, there are some, but not as many as I think there should be. Well, I don't know if that's the right word.
You've come to the right place to shout about sobriety, to shout about addiction and to shout about mental health issues, and we will get into all that. Let's ease you in gently, Shayna. Just tell us a little bit about you and where you are from. And if I've got my dates right, you're coming up for 2 years alcohol free, is that right?
Yeah, so how exciting. I'm 22 months next week. And yeah, then 2 years is not far away, which That's is ridiculous.
Brilliant. That is brilliant. So let's rewind then. Let's rewind more than two years and just tell us about you back then, if you wouldn't mind, and what's brought you to this point.
Well, I grew up in Dudley and I've got two sisters, one either side of me. So I'm a middle child. So, you know, that's already a little, I think, clue to my turbulent past, shall I say. You know, general ordinary upbringing, my parents very loving, very supportive, not as strict as most Asian parents would be, and I think that is why for me drinking was something that was fairly normal in late teens, early 20s, because my parents were okay with it, which, unlike a lot of other people from our community, the Indian community, I didn't have a lot of Asian friends, but the people I did speak to were, you know, drinking was something they did quietly and in the background, and definitely not at family functions or engagements or anything like that. You don't drink in front of other people, because what would all the, you know, aunties and not older people say? So went to university. Funnily enough, I was in Liverpool, Ben. So there I had a typical student life, drinking, you know, just everything was just what everybody else was doing. nothing at that point that I thought was a problem. But when I left university, 25, I moved to Manchester and started my first proper job. And I expected young professional life to be amazing. I'd always wanted to live in Manchester. I knew friends that were moving to Manchester. So I went as well, and it kind of wasn't what I expected. I didn't have as much money as I thought I would. So there was no socialising. I was living in a house where I didn't get in with any of the people that I lived with. Not, they were nice people, just I had nothing in common with them. And the job that I was in, the office was based actually out in Salford Quays, not in the city centre. So I imagined living in a house share with really cool people that I'd be going out for dinner with and going out with all the time and after work drinks. And none of that happened. And my best friend moved to Manchester as well, but she had the life that I wanted. Her house was amazing that she was living in, really sociable, always stuff going on. She loved where she worked. And I found myself at 25 starting the drinking alone, Friday nights especially, at home, bottle of wine. And that soon crept up into the week. And I was miserable. I was miserable at 25. Like, just nothing turned out how I expected to. And then what I noticed was people around me, so friends around me that were living in Manchester or the ones that had gone to other cities for jobs, they all started to, you know, settle down. People started getting engaged. People started buying houses. People were loving their careers and the jobs, and they were moving up the career ladder. And I was just like, this isn't what I wanted. This is shit, basically. And my mental health suffered because of it. Again, I didn't really think it was that big a deal. I thought I was just a bit unhappy. But to kind of speed the story along, I left Manchester. I left everybody I knew in Manchester and Liverpool, and I moved to London because I thought, let's have a fresh start, because, you know, that's what you do. My sister lived in London, so I moved in with her, and I got a decent job. Again, not anything particularly I loved doing, but it, you know, paid well. But London was just the same. I just didn't feel like I belonged there. I didn't really have anything or anyone. Again, the drinking was a bit like sad, lonely drinking, or just constantly convincing my sister and her husband, who, because they were married and I just was living in their spare room, always to drink with me. They probably drank more during that time because I was there. And then what happened? I think it got to a point there I was miserable again. And then one day I went into SDA Travel, Saturday afternoon, went to get my hair cut, popped into SDA Travel next door. And I walked out having put a deposit down for a flight to Australia and Southeast Asia, because I just thought, I don't want to stay in London. I don't know where else to go. I don't know what I want to do work-wise. Why don't I just go traveling? And I went away for 6 months, and you know what? It was great. It was brilliant. I loved it. And I felt like I'd found some confidence in myself again. And, you know, I went and experienced things that all the other people around me weren't doing, because they were doing the serious settling down stuff. So at that point, I felt like, yeah, this is good. Everything's going really well. But then I got back, and I got back just as the recession hit, and I couldn't get a job. So I was trapped in Dudley. And I just fell back into that misery of, what am I doing with my life? Now I'm 28. I managed to get a job, which was not a good job, but it was a job at that point. So, you know, had to kind of at least be grateful for that. But I saw absolutely no future, what I was doing, where I was. And then the drinking was constant. I had my little sister was back home with me as well, and she'd just been back from traveling. So we were both in a bit of a, it was a bit shit, but, you know, let's get on with it. And I think both of us were feeling a bit stuck. And there was a lot of drinking, but it was because of the two of us. We probably didn't realise we were, you know, drinking that much. And maybe it wasn't. I don't know. I can't really even remember that phase. But we made a decision that we would go back to Australia. So 5 days after my 30th birthday, me and my little sister were on a one-way flight to Australia. That was my, let's just start over. Let's just start again. No one knows me here. everything's going to be fine. I'll get a good job. I'll make new friends. I'll do all the things that I've been trying to do in a different country. And the same thing again happened, I guess, after a little while. Not really finding where I belonged, not being able to settle down. And by this point, I'm like, I didn't want all the stuff that my parents, not my parents, that our culture expect us to do. I didn't want the whole get married, settle down, you know. I liked the freedom, but when the freedom is suddenly getting to the point where you're 32 and none of that's happened, I was like starting to get a bit panicked. I stayed in a relationship in Australia that probably I should never have been in, but I think I was probably at the point where like, oh, I'll make it work. I'm 32 now, I've got to make it work. Didn't work out. And this is probably when it gets really, really dark, because I was out in another country. My little sister, by the way, has left now because she couldn't get a visa to stay. So after her year in Australia, she moved to New Zealand. So I'm in Australia on my own. That's a lie. My other sister lived on the Gold Coast. So she was in the country, just five-hour flight. So, you know, she may as well have been somewhere else, but she was there. But yeah, so this relationship didn't work out, but we stayed friends. And as people who are in relationships and split up and try and stay friends, it was a messy, let's stay friends. And a week before Christmas 2012, I find out I'm pregnant, which floored me in like, I can't even, I find this part not hard to talk about because of how traumatic it was, but because I don't remember it. You know how when things are, bad things happen, you just, I must have blocked so much of it out, and I could not see a way out of that. Maybe I don't know if I was making much sense in my own head at that point. I was drinking. I was very lonely, very scared. I didn't tell anybody else except close friends. And I ended up having a termination the week before Christmas. And I think from that point onwards for the next maybe 8 years, 7, 8 years, I spiraled after that. My mental health went really downhill. I hated myself. I felt guilty. I was just drinking in this pit of shame and self-loathing. And it was just really ugly, but it was a blur. I don't really remember much. I think I stayed in Australia another 7 months before my parents basically said, we can't look after you while you're too far away. You need to come home. This was after a series of me trying to, I'd taken several overdoses, ending up in hospital. I just hated myself so much that I had been such a failure. Everything that I had wanted just never worked out. I was just a big fat failure. That's all I saw. So I came home. And I'd like to say that was the point where I got better and things turned around. And they did for a little while, but never dealt with anything. So what happened then for the next few years was me just going around in a circle of things working out, getting a decent job, making new friends, and then any small little challenge or obstacle or something that I came up against would trigger all the past, and I would just go back downhill again and start drinking loads and just end up, I mean, there were countless hospital admittances again, and I just kept going round and round in this horrible cycle of hating myself and just feeling like there was no point me being here and all I'm doing is letting everyone down. And I'm just, you know, I could just see what I was doing to my parents and my family and even my friends. They just were getting to the point where like, we can't deal with this anymore. I just thought I was better off that I wasn't here. And then the weirdest thing is in February 2020, so just before the pandemic, I wasn't at rock bottom. I'd had my rock bottoms, plenty of them, and pulled myself back up, but the drinking was bad. But I was still holding down a job for the best part of it. But February of that year, I was just sat at home one afternoon on a Sunday drinking, but I was having one of those weekends where I just didn't want to talk to anybody. And my parents were kept on a phone. Now, they go to India every winter to escape the winter. So we've got a house up there. So they go for about 6 months. So they're away. But with my, you know, issues and history and all that, they're always just like, you know, if I don't answer the phone, it's constant ringing and ringing because they're worrying about what's she doing, probably thinking, is she alive, is she dead? Because there are times where they've had to get on the next plane and come back because of me. So I'm in having a weekend where I don't want to speak to anyone and deal with anybody, not particularly like at rock bottom, but like I said, just feeling a bit, nah, everyone leave me alone. So they must have phoned and I didn't answer the phone. Next minute, I'm sat in the back room at home and the door opens and it's two people from my street, two neighbours. And I'm like, What is going on here? My parents had called my neighbours. One of them has a key and said, you need to go and check on her. And it was at that point that I thought, okay, your neighbours, people who've seen you grow up from, like we moved into the street when I was 7 years old. These people have seen me grow up and now they're coming to check on me to see if I'm still alive, basically. And I thought, oh my God, Shani, you need to stop. You need to stop this. Like that for me in the weirdest way was the worst thing, because until then it'd been contained within family and close friends, and now these poor people had had to walk into me sat there with a flipping bottle of whiskey next to her. So I was taken away to go and stay with my auntie for a week and then put on a plane to India. And I mean, I'm not going to lie about it. There was a little bit of drinking in between, but I remember being on that plane, made full use of the onboard drinks. But I said to myself, when I land in India, that is it. It has to stop. And I was 100% okay with it. Like there was no like, oh my God, I've got to do this. It was just like, right, that's it now. You have tried to check out of life so many times and you're still here. You're miserable. So you need to find a different way. You need to change something. So I did. I stopped and I haven't picked up a drink since.
Shani, that's amazing. So thank you for sharing. Well, sounds like a really painful few years. Really, really difficult. What happened in India?
I think when I arrived there, I think my parents were in the... I guess they thought, oh, well... we'll have to have a conversation again. She needs to stop and then she'll fight us and trying to make excuses. But that didn't happen this time. I was like, yeah, you know, that's it. It's over. But I guess for them, I probably said that before, they didn't believe me. And this time, rather than kind of fighting back, I just accepted that, no, they're not going to believe you because you've said this 100 times before. So let them do what they need to do. If they're asking you to do something, do it. Go along with it. So they'd obviously be making all these plans and ringing around doctors and all sorts in that week of my neighbours coming around and me staying at my auntie's before I got there. And they'd ordered in this weird, like, holistic powder. And then it was just probably one of those things that it's meant to stop your craving. And I think you feel ill if you have a drink. So they've got all this ready for me. But like, we want you to take this. But they didn't give it to me straight away. So we're talking like 3 or 4 days in. And I said, but I'm not craving. Like, I haven't. And like, that would have passed now. But I thought, don't fight it. Don't fight. I was like, okay, if that's what you want me to do, I would take it. And it was just a bit of, you mixed it with water. And I had it once a day in the evening. But I just realized at that point, just go along with it. You have lied to them and, you know, kept so much stuff from them. So now everything has to just be, have to let them take control for a little while to show that they can trust you again. So I just let them and I just did what they wanted me to do. But very quickly, because I'd made the decision that this was it and I was okay with it, I was doing all the other stuff that I hadn't previously done. I started to deal with all my crap that I'd locked away and avoided and I didn't go for any professional help. I just had taken a lot of, I guess you'd call them self-help books with me. And I read a lot. I spent a lot of time by myself. You know, when they say all these things about being in nature and being on your own and being quiet spaces, that's all I did, just that stuff. And I wish I could, you know, say to people, well, this was my strategy and this is the process. I don't remember there being anything except being alone with my thoughts for a long time, not having access to alcohol, but also not care that it was, that if it was there or not. It was just this decision, this moment of, that's it, it has to be it. You have to change, not just stopping drinking. You have to change everything. So I did, that's what I did. I guess when you go to some of these group therapies, or if you get coaching or anything like that, the stuff that I did in those first few months was probably what people would get if they went to a professional. I kind of just taught myself.
Is that as well, Shayna? Because, you know, we talk about there's a lot of shame attached to women drinking within your culture and your community, and people don't talk about alcohol addiction, men and women, and they don't talk about mental health problems, and you've sort of had to navigate this by yourself. Is that why?
The mental health thing. See, I was never that ashamed about, but I know my parents struggled with how to deal with it. So there may have been times where I would be off sick, and I think they would struggle with, if friends at all, Shayna's home, how come she's at home today? And they probably didn't really know what to say. I think I tried to deal with the mental health stuff by myself, basically. And that is why now I look back, it's like I was drinking because I never wanted to feel all the stuff I was avoiding feeling, like so many of us do. We drink to mask a lot of, you know, emotions and feelings and pain and all that. So I know that's what I was doing now. At the time, I didn't think that. I just thought I liked to drink and it made me more fun, or it drowned out the noise. Like, there was always a reason. I would drink for anything, like good, happy, bad, sad, whatever. But my parents were having to, they didn't know how to deal with the mental health thing. They didn't know how to deal with the alcohol thing. And there was nowhere to go for support in terms of people understanding our background. Because when I look back, it does, I hate saying it, but it does stem from these expectations that were put on me that I was always fighting for some reason. And then when they didn't happen, I felt like I'd failed. I'd never felt good enough. I wasn't the good little Indian girl, daughter. And I don't know whether I just rebelled even more because I didn't fit that mold anyway.
Shayna, can you tell us a bit more about that? I said before we started recording, I'm from Birmingham. Technically, I'm not. I'm from Staffordshire. I went to a very white cathedral school up until the age of 11. And then I went to Birmingham and I went to Edgbaston, a school in Edgbaston, with kids from literally every walk of life there. Suddenly, I realised that I was in a big city, multicultural city. And in a lot of ways, I looked around that classroom, and when you're 11 years old, we talked about football, we talked about movies, we talked about music. We were the same, but actually, yeah, we weren't in a lot of ways too. I realised that the lads from the Asian cultures actually had a lot more pressure on their shoulders than I had at that point. And it came from their community. They used the word expectation. That's actually something that, because I got to be really good friends with people from all sorts of different cultures. And it actually made me feel lucky in a way growing up that I didn't have the same weight of expectation, not just from the family, but it is a more of a community expectation. And tell me if I'm wrong, that's my kind of observations, yeah, from growing up with these guys. Where does that come from? What is this expectation? Why weren't you the good little Indian girl? And what is, you know, in what's it called, air commas, what
are inverted called? Commas,
inverted commas, what is a good little Indian girl?
The expectation, I find this a really difficult thing to explain, because it, from my experience, the expectation was there, but it wasn't that obvious. Like I said, my parents were quite liberal and they weren't as strict as some others, so we had a certain amount of freedom. When I went to university, a lot of Indian girls my age who were also going to university at that time were went to universities that were within an hour's drive, or they'd stay at home because my mum and dad said they'd buy me a car if I stayed at home. So they were kept close. And if they did go away, they would be home every weekend. Whereas we were like, go wherever you want, doesn't matter. There was no, like, you know, we literally could go wherever we want, and we just didn't have any restrictions on anything. And then after university, when that most girls were, I think they were expected to marry kind of right mid-20s, before you're 30, you know, find somebody and settle down. Now, I think my parents always knew they were never going to be able to like match us up with somebody. That was not ever on the table. But I think they just expected us to find somebody suitable. Now, that went out the window when my sister got married, because she married an Australian. So I think after that, they were like, they're just let's just, you know, hope that they meet somebody and they're happy. So that was fine to a certain extent. Mum and dad are okay about it. We as a family is slightly a bit different, but it's the wider community. Knowing that my parents would have, and probably still do, get talked about that they've got two daughters over the age of 30 who are still not married and don't have any children. And that they have a daughter who moved to the other side of the world. Two daughters. Well, actually, we all moved to the other side of the world at one point. That is weird. That's like, my mum was actually asked, don't you love your kids? My mum was like, what do you mean? She's like, because you've let them move to the other side of the world, does that mean you don't love them? Or something along the lines. There's this weird family stick together. Girls don't go off traveling, married by 30, and house and a husband and kids. My parents wanted good for us in whatever we wanted. So we had the freedom, but the wider community would have seen that as very strange. And as much as we were okay with it and mum and dad are okay with it, it's still knowing you're getting talked about and a bit frowned upon, or like gossiped about, I guess. Because I know that happens. I'm sure it does. And my mum and dad knows it happens. It's Indian community is very insular, and I don't know. And they try to, I think, because my parents' generation are trying to carry on and hold on to the traditions that they came to this country with. A lot of that was put on us. But we also had to blend into this new way of, you know, we had to grow up in England. So we had that balance of integrating into this society, being brought up in the society, but also having those expectations and traditions that mum and dad are all, you know, the community are trying to keep hold of.
Are you religious, Shayna?
No. If I put it down on a form, I say I'm a Hindu. Do I go to the temple? No. The holidays that come, Diwali, it's really difficult. We kind of know that it's there, but we don't go and do all the things that people who, you know, are religious would do. We don't go to the temple on any occasion unless it's a wedding.
The reason I ask is, in terms of, you know, Jesus turned water into wine. I'm not religious either, but like, what is it? What's the relationship between Hinduism and
right.
alcohol?
I don't think it's
not like Islam, for example. Where you
it's not. No, drink. It's not like it's not like forbidden, but I think it's frowned upon.
Right.
And frowned upon in everybody knows that people drink. Men can probably drink openly. Women, not so much. And if they do, it still has to be done in a very female way, you know, only drink wine and maybe have one glass. And even then, not that openly, but it's not completely a no-no. It's a bit difficult because if you're in India, certain states or certain areas, certain castes are very much, it's definitely not a thing.
It's prohibited in some areas.
The state we live in is, it's a dry state. You can't. You can drink alcohol if you're going in as a tourist, because you have a permit to bring some into that state. But where we live, you can't buy it. So I just feel like I grew up in just this weird middle ground. And I think part of me thinks, is, did that confuse me along the way of like almost trying to fight the traditions and the expectations so much that I went so the other way that then I ended up with feeling like I didn't belong anywhere. And because of all of that, I felt very lonely, unsettled, and felt like a failure.
Freddie, do you want to jump in here?
I certainly do, guys, because you mentioned a couple of my trigger words. One is failure and two is frowned upon. And no one has ever been more frowned upon than me. And you know what? I've been frowned upon and I've been proud. And this is what I have to say to you, Shayna, because I've been here quite quietly for me, just listening and absorbing your story. And one, I absolutely take my hat off to you. You are an absolute inspiration. I'm sitting here in awe of everything that you've done, everything that you've been through. And here you are standing up saying that even though you didn't fit in, you still changed your behaviours. And yet I have been slowly building up. You'll all be happy to hear. I've been building up like a volcano for this because there's so many points that I want to cover. And apologies that these probably aren't questions. They're more just statements I'm going to be throwing at you guys. But Shayna, right from the start, when you were saying about feeling like you didn't fit in, I was just thinking, because I've been in that position before. I know so many people whose parents wanted them to be the doctors or the lawyers or the accountants, and they went along with what their parents thought. And excuse my language, everyone, they are fucking miserable now. I know so many people who made that move to Manchester, literally Manchester, because that's where I went to uni, made that move to Manchester, just like you did, Shayna, but they're still there. They're still in the job that they don't like, that doesn't pay them any money. They're still living with people who they don't really get on with, be that friends, family, relatives, or whoever. They're still in that situation where they're saying, I don't fit in, I don't belong, I'm not happy. And they're still drinking and they're going along on this vicious, miserable cycle. And that kills me. That absolutely kills me, because these people really are wasting their lives. And one day they're going to wake up and it is going to be all over. And this is, I know I get on my soapbox with this, but there are so many people that they've died years before that they're put into the ground. And you can see it in their faces, you can see it in their eyes and in their behaviours. And the fact that you saw that yourself, Shayna, and you thought, I'm not going to tolerate this life that I don't feel belongs to me. I'm going to stand up, I'm going to make changes, and I'm going to actually physically move to a different place, do different jobs, meet different people. And you know what? Maybe it didn't immediately work out the second time or the third time or the fourth time, but you kept on changing and you kept on moving. And that I find is so, so inspiring. And you know what? And I'm off on one now, apologies. You know, people talk about inspiring stuff and you know, the people that climb the mountains and do the marathons. I think what you do is so, so inspiring. Being in that situation and thinking, this isn't 100% me. This isn't my destiny. This isn't my life. And to have that courage and that conviction to change it whilst drinking as well. And we all know how drinking can kill our motivation and our spirit and what we want to achieve and give us that fog and take away the clarity. And you still did it and you still did it. And I think that is amazing. And so I must take my hat off to you. And I'm literally awestruck and inspired by you. And I think everything that you're saying about feeling that you don't quite belong. And I've been there as well. I think so many of our listeners have been. Being on this path and thinking, this isn't me. This isn't right. And sometimes it's a whisper in your ear. And sometimes it's something that's hitting you over the head. And it feels like it's screaming. And we feel like we're in this situation and we're screaming like, this isn't me. I can't take this a second longer. But then we don't know how to change. And it kills us. And it's so soul destroying. But the fact that you recognised it and you did it, and that you know, your parents could have put you on that plane to India. And you could have got to India and your first thought could have been, right, how do I get some alcohol? Because we all know there's no one more resourceful than someone who really wants a drink, and they can source it from anywhere. And But the fact that you made these changes and these steps and you stuck with it, as I say, I just think it's amazing. And believe it or not, I do have a question rather than just ranting for 5 minutes. My question is what now? And we've been through the dark times and we know that alcohol isn't a silver bullet, but now you've done this amazing thing. You're coming up to the 2 years alcohol free. Do you feel that you've got that clarity? Do you feel that you're on the right path now? Are you still looking for certain things? Like what's the steps forward for you?
A friend of mine and I were messaging each other today because I was listening to a podcast. On the podcast, it was a Stephen Bartlett podcast.
Oh, I like him.
CEO.
Yeah.
Great podcast.
And today it was with Russell Howard and he asked him, are you happy? It was the question that I think Patrice Evra talked about a few weeks ago. And I just randomly messaged my friend, so like, are you happy? And he was like, it's a bit deep, isn't it? For like a Monday morning. And then we were talking about it and he said, are you? I said, actually, I am. He said, is there room for improvement? I said, oh yeah, there'll always be room for improvement. And I'm going to make sure that happens. I said, but now if I died tomorrow, I would go with a full heart. And it was only today that I realized that although I know there's so much more I am going to do, and I'm well on that path to doing so, I have found where I'm meant to be. I came full circle. I literally came full circle. And where I am now is that whole journey was horrendous. It was horrible. The trauma and pain and all of that stuff I went through was purely to get me to this place of figuring out who I was and finding my way back to me. And it's such a, nothing drastically has changed. I'm still in the same house that I was living in when I was 7 years old. This is my old bedroom. Like, how ridiculous is that? I'm still living with my parents. I'm so happy because I now get to use my journey, my story, my everything to help other people. I'm an ambassador for an amazing sober community. I coach people in that community. I coach women outside of that community, not just about sobriety, just about changing your life if you're not happy. That is what I do now. And I feel like, yeah, I have found it. This is where I'm meant to be. And without all of that shit, I wouldn't be doing this.
Yes, I love that. And I 100% agree, because I think all the shit, all the difficult things that we've had to go through, and I know you've been through so much, and I think it's amazing that you've come through it. And I know so many people out there, the hangovers, the regret, the mistakes, the anxiety, the getting fired, the bad relationships, everything that we've been through, all of us, we're all united in this spectacular collection of fuck-ups that we've all made. But maybe, just maybe they all had to happen. And I fully believe this. You know what? I have to believe it. Otherwise, I'd just never be able to get out of bed every day. But we have to believe that these bad things had to happen to us because they bought us. None of this, we wouldn't all be here, right now, on the world's probably number one alcohol-free podcast if we hadn't all been through these experiences. And the fact that you went through them now means that you can shine that inspirational, sober light to help so many people. And I don't think, hopefully you do realise, is how many people that you inspire. And I think, I say, when it comes to sobriety, but also changing people's lives. I think that's the point that you mentioned there around, you know, if today was our last, and I know it's the Steve Jobs quote, and many other people have said it much better than I can, but it's true. And it's also a quote that's so easy to say, like, oh, if you don't like things, then you should probably change because life is short. But it's so bloody true. It really is. Yeah. And I need to get, you've inspired me to get better at this, because there's things that I have in my life that I'm not happy with, that I'm putting up with, that I'm just going through the motion and getting up every morning and saying, oh, not really liking this. So we can change. All of us can change. And that's what I believe that you've really shown us. And that's what I believe that you were put here to do, to show us this way, to help us all live that best possible life.
Hear, hear. I echo everything that Freddie has just said. I'm really aware, Shayna, that we're just about out of time. But before we wrap up and say thank you, if somebody's listening to this podcast now and they might be listening in secret and they might be listening feeling shame and isolation and feel that they can't talk about it, maybe they are within the Asian community and really, really struggling, where you were 2 years plus ago, what advice would you give? What little nugget would you share?
Find somebody to confide in, whether it's a stranger or somebody you know. Talk to somebody, because you will not be alone. I think if it's someone you know, you have to know that you need to know that you can completely trust them. Safer, honestly, go with a stranger. Somebody, go and find someone like me on the internet, because they've got no connections to your family or your community if that's the situation you're in, and you will get a completely like unbiased account, you know, advice and help, and you will be able to know that that's not going to get back to anybody you don't want it to at that point. So yeah, I think if it was from an Asian community, that's what I would say. But for anyone else, find your people, because they are out there, but you're only going to find them when you figure out who you are first. So if you're sitting in a life that doesn't feel right, you're not going to find the people that you can talk to and connect with and feel like you belong and are part of, because you're not you. And until you figure that out, nothing's going to feel right. So I don't even know if I answered the question, because I went off on one there. Sorry.
You're doing a Freddie, which is brilliant. Yeah, absolutely. No, you did answer the question. Thank you so much for sharing so many personal things about you. I love the fact that you are vocal about your sobriety, your journey, and your own mental health struggles. And as Freddie has said, you know, now inspiring many, many others. Thank you for your time on the pod. It has been really lovely to chat to you. If people want to find out more about what you do and the support services that you offer to others, how can they do that?
Yeah, you're best off just finding me on Instagram. My Instagram handle's @Shayna_KCJ. And you've got links to my Be Sober as well as my own coaching services. And I'm just there to chat to and listen to anyone. So, yeah.
Fantastic. And if anybody gets in touch with us, we will send them your way. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's been amazing.
Over the Influence is no longer just a podcast. Our online community is buzzing with people like you. Meet Steph.
Hi, I just wanted to say a big thank you to Shazza, Freddie and Ben from Over the Influence for all of the help and support that they've given me since I decided I needed a break from alcohol. I can say with absolute confidence that I wouldn't have made it this far without them, and I'm nearly at 10 months now, so maybe I will make the year after all, against all the odds. So yeah, big thank you guys, appreciate all of your support, and thanks for everything you've done. Cheers!
So if you want to join us, go to overtheinfluence.co.uk and be part of the Sober Rebellion.